Welcome to this episode of the Mycotoxin in Chronic Illness Summit. I'm very excited to have with us today Andrew Salisbury, the founder of Purity Coffee. Welcome, Andrew. It's so good to have you here with us today.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it really is exciting. And what I'd love to our audience to hear is something we were chatting about just before we went live is, you know, what got you into this field? Because it's not the most original field for someone to just enter coffee production.
Yeah, it hasn't been my background at all. I mean, I've been most of my life in telecommunications, in software, and in software in Latin America. And I'll give you a sort of shorter version of the story, but the history is I sold the business in 2011. I was very used to the software industry, took some time off with my wife, and it was really looking for the next opportunity, but it was going to be another opportunity in the exact same sort of field. And then my wife started having some health issues. So Amber was, low energy, difficult to get out of bed in the morning. Really it was just one of these things that was just, it was affecting her lifestyle and her ability to parent, and it was just very stressful for all of us. So we went to doctors and the normal sort of stuff. And along the whole journey of doing that, my wife was drinking a lot of coffee, and I think I was probably trying to be a little domineering and tell her that she should give up on her coffee, and she was very resistant. My attitude is it was one step on the accelerator, one step on the brake, that her focus was, if she was drinking coffee, she's giving herself energy she didn't have. And so I started getting educated about coffee, probably to win the argument, and met two professors at the Institute of Coffee Studies in Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. And they educated me that there's just a huge gap between what the scientific community knows about the health benefits of coffee and the consumers, and it's incredibly good for you. So it just sort of got me down this road of really research and learning about the health benefits of coffee. And again, then I met one of the top professors in the world, Dr. Adriana Ferrar in the University of Rio. And she basically worked with me for about 18 months on a consulting project, looking at every step of the chain with only one question in mind. If we were to make every decision based on health, what would it look like? And so that's sort of... And I really didn't know there was going to be a business at the end of that sort of research. But after 2 years, we found a coffee. We made every decision based on health. And we started to present it to friends, and it was received really well. And, that's how we started.
Did your wife's health go back to normal after she started drinking your coffee?
Her health went back to normal, and it took a long while. And I would never say that our coffee was sort of the panacea that it was everything. I think that there was a series of things we did. I mean, we did mold remediation, and we changed her diet, and we looked at different foods, and we cut down on the bad things in our diets. There's a lot of things that we did, and those all had a profound effect. But what I say to Amber now is the knowledge that I have just about the importance of selecting the right coffee was probably one of the easiest things we could have done had we have known. So I don't know to the level it contributed to our health problems. It was probably a series of things, but I mean, it's your choice in coffee is a very easy selection to improve overall health and longevity.
Definitely.
Yeah, what's exciting to me is, especially for this audience, is how careful you are at making sure that the coffee isn't moldy. Because, I've always felt that, again, healthy people, the mycotoxin load from coffee, maybe not great for you, but I don't think probably isn't that significant. But as you get more sensitive, it's going to be a bigger and bigger deal. And so how do you go about lowering the mycotoxin load?
Well, so our history is we decided when I worked with Professor Adriana Ferrar, we said every decision based on health, we're not going to compromise. So there were some really obvious, easy decisions, like should it be organic or sprayed with pesticides? Should it be moldy or should it be free of mold? And so these were decisions, conversations that happened over 30 seconds. We go, okay, we'll have non-moldy food, obviously.
Right.
Then the next steps after that are a little bit more complicated. The problem with coffee is that mold develops at various stages in the production if companies cut corners. And, and following all of the rules costs a little bit more money, and it doesn't happen as often as we would like it to happen in coffee. So one of the issues with coffee is when you pick coffee, for example, there's a lot of industrial farming for picking coffee. So they have these big tractors that go down the rows of coffee trees and they shake the trees and they shake ripe cherries, underripe cherries and overripe cherries all at the same time, twigs, leaves, and they put them in this collecting system and then it's processed later. But the problem is some of these cherries are moldy because they ripen at different levels. So when you put, let's say, imagine putting a moldy strawberry in a vat of fresh strawberries, you come back the next day, the whole vat is moldy. So while we're not super concerned, we are concerned about the mold. What we're more concerned about is the derivatives, the mycotoxins that come from the mold, like ochratoxin A. So that's a really big issue in the coffee industry, as far as I'm concerned, is ochratoxin A, because it doesn't roast away. You know, a lot of people say, you know, I take my coffee, and even if it was, did have some mold on it, if I roast it, it's going to roast away. That's not true. It is true of the mold. It's not true of the mycotoxins that develop from it and the ochratoxin A.
Yeah. And it's interesting that ochratoxin A, when we do urine mycotoxin testing on people, it's probably the most common one to show up, often in sometimes not in high enough numbers to say, oh my God, but yeah. I wasn't aware that coffee is probably where it's coming from.
Yeah, and it's another part of the problem is that it's not the same level of standards in the US. So in Europe or in Asia, the standards which are parts per billion of anywhere from 5 to 10 parts per billion is an acceptable standard, no greater than that. But in the US, you don't have standards. So it often means that it's the source of coffee that maybe wouldn't have fit the criteria of Europe and Asia. So, it can be an issue.
Yeah, no, that is a problem. We have standards for animals because we can, it comes to mycotoxins, but not for people in the state.
Yeah. So tell us about what makes your coffee different than most other coffees.
Well, I think it's because we asked a different question. And our question was, when I started learning about the health benefits of coffee, I mean, just in areas like liver disease, prevention of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, I'm sure you've seen all of these studies around coffee and health. I was looking initially and saying, okay, well, this is great. My wife's got, probably drinking poor quality coffee. What's the very best coffee that I can buy? And Adriana couldn't point me to one. She could only point me to a shopping list of things that I should look for when asking for the coffee. And then as we worked later, the shopping list got more and more complex. So, so she would say things. So the basic things on the shopping list coffee needs to be organic. It's the most heavily treated crop in the planet. The sort of pesticides that are used on coffee and the quantity of pesticides, endosulfan, glyphosate. I mean, you literally have to have your coffee is organic. Then another low bar is it needs to be tested for mold and mycotoxins. But again, that's a low bar. We should ask every one of our coffee producers to guarantee that. It's a $50, $75 test, and it's just, we should not be drinking mycotoxins in our food. But what we really focus on is the antioxidants in coffee. So the health benefits that come from coffee don't come from the absence of bad stuff. Now, you don't want mold and you don't want pesticides and you want your coffee to be fresh, but you also want more chlorogenic acids, which are the antioxidants in coffee. So what we do is we focus on the CGAs in the coffee, the polyphenols, the chlorogenic acids in coffee. And that's where it gets a little bit complicated. The amount of chlorogenic acids, the antioxidants in coffee, vary from crop to crop, harvest to harvest, region to region. So the only way for you to find the highest level of antioxidants is you have to lab test coffee from around the world, and then you pick the ones that are highest, and then we roast it to maintain the antioxidants. So when you roast coffee, you can create negative compounds and create positive compounds or maintain positive compounds in the roast. And we focus on developing a roast curve for that specific coffee to maintain the antioxidants that were available in the green bean.
That is a lot of work.
Yeah.
Okay. It was one of the issues at the beginning. We we honestly felt like, even though we weren't going to compromise and we were making every decision based on health, we felt like we might have over-engineered this in the sense that we go far beyond what our customers are asking for. I mean, they ask for, you know, mold-free, mycotoxin-free organic coffee, and we're focusing really on the antioxidants, but we know that's where the truth is going to lead, which is as people recognize that coffee is good for health, they're going to start saying, why? It's not the caffeine. It's not, you don't get this from drinking an energy drink. You get this from the antioxidants. And so that's why we focused in that area.
Right. And while I'm at, does you make a decaf, I believe?
We do, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's Swiss water. There's four ways to decaf coffee, and two of them uses poisons, which you really, you just don't want anywhere near your food. The other two, which is Swiss water and critical CO2, are the only ways that are really sort of natural and they retain the antioxidants in the decaffeination process. So, I mean, I know I'm a little biased, but I think we have the best decaf in the US. I mean, I'm a little biased, but I say that because what we do is different. We have the highest quality coffee that we can get, which is organic, regeneratively farmed, hand-picked, hand-selected, bird-friendly. I mean, and there's all the reasons why these monikers make a difference for health. But a lot of people, when they decaf the coffee, then it leaches all of the antioxidants out of the coffee. So obviously that doesn't work. So we have to have a method that maintains the antioxidants.
Sounds like this is actually really good for the planet too, not just harmful, but probably beneficial.
It's a big part of where we're going now as a company. Yeah. So we didn't know this starting out. So our decision was every decision based on health, wherever it was going to lead us. And so pretty early on, we discovered it's about antioxidants. And then we would buy coffee that has the highest level of antioxidants. But about 2 years ago, we started to recognize a pattern, which is that the coffee that was highest in antioxidants was regeneratively farmed. So it was organic, regeneratively farmed. So it was grown in its natural conditions. So we would start looking for labels that would show that the coffee is grown in its natural conditions. So we'd say, well, it needs to be hand-picked and hand-selected, because if it's grown in its natural conditions, that's the only way you can pick the coffee. You're going to climb up a hill, you're going to hand-pick and hand-select them. A tractor couldn't possibly go down those rows of coffee trees. So we look for hand-picked, hand-selected, Smithsonian, bird-friendly, because that would indicate that migratory birds could rest on the trees. They wouldn't do that in a farm environment.
Right.
But what we started to recognize is that the soil quality obviously feeds the nutrients in the plant and the nutrients in the coffee. Avoid the bad stuff, get really good quality soil for the coffee. So what we've started to do now is we've just bought a farm in Colombia in a place called Pitalito, and we're working on organic regenerative farming for coffee so we can create very high standards. And the reason that it matters is that if you till farm, you industrially farm, so you churn up the soil, you till farm, you release carbon into the atmosphere. Organic regenerative farming captures carbon from the atmosphere. So not only is it good for you, and it's higher in antioxidants and it's more nutrient dense, but it's better for the planet. It actually is a better farming method that reduces the carbon footprints of when it actually eradicates the carbon footprint of coffee.
I love it.
Yeah. This is just... It's such a good example of, you know, people are coining the term now of salugenesis, or like returning to health, and how that has to happen on multiple levels. You know, we, at least as physicians to the world, we always focused on disease and pathology, you know, and this is helping focus on that returning to, you know, just like the soil and the plants, they're going to give you better, healthier fruits because they're healthier, and just obvious to people, if we are ingesting healthier foods and drinks, we're going to be healthier. And the work that you've been exploring with the antioxidant benefits and how it affects. And so I'd love to go down a little rabbit hole. You talked about you had some interesting conversations with experts in liver disease.
Yeah.
And this, because that's a big one for our patients.
Yeah, very early on, we were lucky enough to be introduced to Dr. Sanjeev Chopra, who's the last dean of admission at Harvard Med School, and he's a liver surgeon. And for about 35 years, he's written a couple of books, and he's written one recently on coffee and another one called The Big Five. And the reason I reached out to him initially is that in The Big Five, it's the five big things that you can do for, to improve your overall health and longevity. And there was things like meditation, walking, vitamin D, that sort of thing, but coffee was chapter number one. And in his first chapter, he talks about, he said, look, as a liver surgeon, 35 years, I haven't seen any one thing that you can drink that will have a better impact, or eat, that will have a better impact on your liver. There's none of the things that people talk about are as positive to the liver as coffee. So there's been some very large studies, umbrella studies, with over 200 different studies in them looking at the liver specifically. And it shows that from every cup from the baseline, you have a 20% lower chance of ever developing non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, liver cirrhosis, or end-stage liver disease. So in other words, you drink two cups of coffee a day, you have a 40% lower chance of ever developing liver disease. You drink eight cups or four cups, you have an 80% chance. I mean, it's dose dependent.
And then most coffee is full of pesticides and mycotoxins.
Yeah.
And that negates the power of the coffee.
We had this conversation. It's such an interesting point. I have this conversation all the time. Is that there's the bad stuff and there's the good stuff. And clearly all of these studies have been done on coffee over the last, say, 40 years. So some people were drinking awful quality coffee and some people were drinking great coffee. And the health benefits come despite that. So what I think is interesting is what happens if you make every decision based on health? Do they get better? I mean, we'll have to do some serious testing over the years, but clearly having more antioxidants in the coffee.
Good coffee, bad coffee, but coffee seems to be important.
Yeah. I mean, so we don't really know what happens when you put all of the, put this together. I mean, we've got a lot of pesticide residues on coffee. We've got sort of quality and quantity of pesticides that shouldn't be used. We've got mycotoxins, which are very aggressive. And then we've got, on the other hand, the very positive things like chlorogenic acids and the polyphenols. So what we are attempting to do is reduce the bad stuff, make sure there's none of the bad stuff, more of the good stuff. You know, only time will tell whether it has a direct effect on your health, but we can only say anecdotally, I mean, in 4 years now, we've got nearly 17,000 five-star testimonials from very passionate customers. And I'm not saying this is a sales pitch, but it's really just to look at this sort of feedback on a weekly basis of people who couldn't drink coffee and now can drink it. I mean, it's really encouraging that we're in the right place.
So when you say these people couldn't drink coffee and now they can, what is the difference? Were they revved up? Were they a bit sick?
Well, a lot of them is, I mean, we have a big following with mast cell activation syndrome, with a lot of people who are very sensitive there, histamine allergies, mold toxicity. Some people, he just said, you know, I was 40, I woke up one day and I just couldn't stomach my coffee. And then I had to drink less and less. And it could be things just as strange as, you know, itching and skin conditions, stomach upset, nervousness. I mean, a lot of the side effects that people think come from coffee come from bad coffee. Uh-huh. It's not the coffee. It really isn't. It's like, right, you being nervous, nervous energy, upset stomach, cold sweats that people recognize when they go, oh, I had one too many cups of coffee, just it was one too much coffee. That really is a result of bad coffee. Now, we can't tell you whether you've got a sensitivity to ochratoxin A or pesticide residue or stale coffee. That's another issue. Freshness of coffee is very important. We're drinking stale coffee as a nation. But anyway, so what I'm saying is, it's just, you know, it's we'll never know exactly what the cause is, but when we know, we will remove the bad stuff and focus on just improving the good stuff that is much better tolerated.
Yeah. Well, once again, you're showing that it's the canaries. I mean, because basically, it's the people, mast cell activation, histamine sensitivity, mold sensitivity, mycotoxin sensitivity. These are all sensitivities of people whose systems are inflamed from some, usually another source.
Yeah.
And finally, the system starts to break down a bit, you know, and you become more sensitive to whatever is in the environment that can inflame you.
And these are our patients.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I said the same thing to Amber, and that she used the analogy of a glass of water, that, you know, you can pour in water to a glass when it's half full, but when it's completely full and it's tipping over, you just need a little drop of something, and then you're spilling the water. Same thing with her sensitivities to certain things. She's built up a resistance now. But coffee is something we drink every single day. So if you're drinking something that isn't as good for you as it can be, and you're drinking it 3 to 4 cups a day, I mean, it can have a real profound impact on your diet. So,
yeah, well, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Yeah. It's been very interesting. And what I look forward to learning more about the intricacies of you know, not because it's, you know, when I, the more I think about it, is that the studies over the years on coffee, as I remember, you know, 20 years ago, there was increasing every disease. And then as we started to look closer, we started to realize that, no, it was actually improving everything from pancreatic cancer to liver disease, you know. And it's just something that I'd love to explore with you more, since it looks like you've done the work.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm a geek when it comes to coffee.
Great. That's very exciting.
That's
so
wonderful.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was great.